Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
This is the music that I like to use as I walk briskly down the hallway. Or as I call it, my marathon.
I just had a picture of you walking briskly down the hallway, or just kind of skipping.
Skipping?
Yes, just skipping along to this.
Oh, that's a whole different picture then.
In delight.
I think it works better in slow-mo.
Yes, right. Definitely. Yeah. Right.
Well, the way that I run does look like slow-mo. happy marathon morning, everybody. And thank you for, you know, one of my favorite things. I don't like very many things on marathon morning, although.
You don't like very many things.
Period. marathon morning has been a little bit of a thorn in my paw for many years now. But I got to say, doing the show this morning from the TV station on the northwest side of Chicago, which is nowhere near the marathon, as opposed to being down right in the middle of the belly of the beast on marathon morning, as we have for so many years, has made it much more pleasant today. But I'll tell you what my favorite thing is about marathon morning, the emails that I've been getting the last couple of weeks of people looking forward and requesting me
to complain.
To complain about things on marathon.
That's why I asked the question.
Yeah. Just got a text right now, as a matter of fact, from the 630 area code. I've been looking forward to hearing about Uncle Dean's marathon day commute for weeks now. Kind of anticlimactic with him broadcasting from Bradley Place. Oh, well.
We should hear the Price is Right horns now.
Yeah. Bum, 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 bum. Well, too bad, my friend. It's it's a whole new day for marathon broadcasting on Saturday morning. This is what I'm proposing, that on marathon morning from now on, all of us, the whole crew, producer Ryan, engineer Bob, everybody, that we all come down here at the TV station. We take over the TV station.
Be fine with me.
From now on.
Wouldn't that be for me?
Right? Much easier for all of us. Much easier.
Yes.
Schwani's not looking forward to that, apparently.
I would feel as though I would be remiss in my duties, not reporting on the activity that's going on and being in the center of things.
I'll be there.
You act like you're outside in the middle of the crowd.
Well, we can see literally, right, Andy, with the runners that run past the building here as the festivities begin.
That adds a lot to your reports, does it?
Yes, of course it does.
I can give you a live traffic report right now. The Columbus Street Bridge, they're taking up the little red carpet that they put on the bridge to make sure that the runners don't slip.
Slip on the bridge.
So I think that's pretty much history now.
Yeah. I don't know if both of you have heard, they have this new invention called television, where you can actually see what's going on someplace else.
Yeah.
So it's been nothing but win-win for me this morning. So that's what I'm gonna propose a couple of different things.
Okay.
One, that we do the broadcast from here on next marathon morning. Or two, you know, we always do our annual Tree Time broadcast every year, which we are going to be doing, by the way, this year, November the 15th. It's coming up very soon. Maybe, why don't we do the Tree Time broadcast on marathon morning?
Ooh.
And that way we're even further away from the marathon.
Yes. What's a month difference,
I'd
right?
I'd love to be in Las Vegas or someplace on marathon morning, but Lake Barrington's fine with me. Maybe we do the Tree Time broadcast on marathon. We start a new tradition and start doing that, even though it's not even Halloween yet.
Yeah, who cares?
But we start doing our Tree Time thing. That's confirmed, by the way. November the 15th, we're going to be out of Tree Time.
Nice.
14th?
14th. It's the 14th.
It's the 14th?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. Well, that would be weird if I was there on a Monday all by myself.
All by yourself, wondering why no one else was there.
Where is everybody?
Not as popular this year as has been in the past. 14th is when we're going to be out there. So So we're looking forward to that. We've already got some guests lined up for the show. It's going to be a big, fun show. It's all going to be COVID safe. We're going to take, you know, the obvious precautions that we need to be safe out there. This is what, we've got like a month to go for this, but I would like to take listener votes on what dangerous thing I should do to Schwanee. That's become a tree time tradition.
Yep.
Doing something which put Schwanee's life in peril live in front of an audience.
Well, last time it was the bow and arrow. How about a guillotine?
Oh, a guillotine would be nice.
Hmm.
Say I just cut my own throat.
Yeah, you might say that.
What about having him
and you're getting a little ahead of the game too.
What if you were to rappel from the ceiling and put a star on the tallest tree they have there?
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
I like that. Well, let's keep the ideas coming in. You know, everybody, of what dangerous thing we can have Schwanee do in front of a live audience. It's become a new tree time tradition on our broadcast, so we're going to we'll work on all of that. I was hanging out with Cindy Crawford last night.
Really?
I don't want to drop any names, but apparently I just did.
Yeah, I think you did.
Supermodel Cindy Crawford was in town.
Why weren't we invited?
I don't know. I specifically told my people to contact you to make sure that you knew that.
I received no communique.
I cannot even believe that somehow fell through the cracks. She was at a photo gallery. There was a photo exhibition of her photos. Along that were made by photographer David Yarrow, who's a very renowned, worldwide renowned photographer. And she was there for the premiere of this showing. And we had a nice chat with her, and we're going to share some of that conversation with you a little bit later in the show this morning. But you know where the gallery is located? In Bridgeport.
Hmm.
I haven't been down to Bridgeport forever. And man, has it changed down there!
It's going to be very popular there tonight.
It will. Well, for the Sox game for sure. But you know, just in the neighborhoods, I cannot believe how gentrified, I guess you might say, Bridgeport has become with new housing everywhere, fancy businesses. It's like a new hipster's paradise down there, with coffee houses and restaurants and. You know, things like that. It was very nice. I think the last time I went down there, I went down to Rico Benny's and had a breaded steak sandwich.
That brings back memories.
Right, Rico Benny's?
Yeah.
It's a classic place down there. What's the other place down there famous? Freddy's? Am I remembering that right? That there's a Freddy's? There's a famous Italian ice place. That's right off of the expressway. When you get off the expressway, there's a Italian ice place there. Farrow's, maybe is it called? I don't remember. But man, Bridgeport! If you have not been to Bridgeport, do yourself a favor. Get down there. Go to some of the restaurants down there. Just there are art galleries everywhere. It's the old Mayor Daley wouldn't recognize the place. You know that's how much it's changed over the years. And then all the action there tonight. Over at the ballpark whose name I can never remember.
Guaranteed rate field.
That's right. I still want to call it Kaminsky Park.
You still want to call it Kaminsky.
I want to call it Kaminsky Park. Who's going to win tonight? Andy, is it going to be over for the Sox tonight, do you think?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, they have not been able to hit the ball at all. No extra base hits in the first two games. And the Astros lineup has been very, very potent against the White Sox pitching. Dylan Cease tonight, he's going to have to set a tone early if they're going to win. And I'm copping out because I don't know who's going to win.
Schwanee, what's your expert sports opinion on this?
Oh, I think it'll be a good game.
I thought he'd say yes. There's definitely going to be a game.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty much what he said. Yes. That's pretty much what he said.
The White Sox are playing tonight. That'll be a fine.
There definitely will be a game tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there will. Yes, yeah, indeed. It's going to be interesting. I mean, this is obviously a must win. So, As Tony La Russa said in the lovely sports cliches, all hands are on deck tonight.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's keep our fingers crossed. You know, when we want our Chicago teams to win, right?
Of course, of course.
Even if you're, if you're a Cubs fan, you still want, you still root for the home team, right? I guess some people wouldn't, but
yeah, or the Astros who cheated their way to a World Series a couple years ago. So yeah, you want them. Yeah. You want the White Sox.
Yeah, you want them to kind of redeem that whole thing a little bit. So that would be nice. Either way, Jason Benetti's going to be on Bob Sirott's show tomorrow morning. So win or lose, you're not going to want to miss that conversation. So that should be fun. So that brings us then to the far-flung forecast. There you go. That's what heralds it in every week. Our weekly compendium of fascinating facts and figures, all brought to us by the one and only Dave. He's not a Kenyan, Schwani.
No, I'm not. You are correct about that, sir. Thank you, Uncle Dean. Good morning, everyone. Today we go north. Into Wisconsin, to northern Wisconsin, to the small town of Peshtigo, Wisconsin.
I love Peshtigo.
Peshtigo. Peshtigo, Wisconsin, has a population of 3,502.
Hmm.
And it is about 45 minutes north of Green Bay, to give you an idea of its approximate location. It's really not far at all from the Wisconsin-Michigan state line, where Wisconsin borders with the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. We bring up Peshtigo today because there is a very, very interesting, fascinating tie-in with the city of Chicago. And that is because Peshtigo, on October 8th, 1871, had a fire also. 1,200 people or more may have died in that fire.
Oh, what was the date on that?
The same day as the beginning of the Great Chicago Fire. Exact. 150 years ago this weekend, October 8th.
Exact same day.
The
imagine
exact
that.
Same day.
Two devastating fires like that. Same day, fairly close proximity.
And 1,200 or more perished. It is still recognized as one of the worst fire catastrophes in a municipality in the United States. How about this? I didn't know this until I was doing some research on this.
Your research team dug this up?
My research team dug this up. Not only did we have the Great Chicago Fire on October 8th, Peshtigo, Wisconsin, Port Huron, Michigan,
what?
Holland, Michigan, and Manistee, Michigan all had fires on the same day, October 8th, 1871.
Boy, that Mrs. O'Leary really got around.
Got a lot of cows somewhere, huh?
should we correct that Mrs. Yeah. It's been more than proven that Mrs. O'Leary had nothing to
she
do.
She did not. The cow the did not kick over the lantern and start the fire.
That's a good song, though. Remember that song?
Yes.
Yeah. Miss O'Leary put a lantern in the shed. That's all I remember. Cow kicked it over and winked his eye and said, "It'll be a hot time in the old town tonight." Apparently, I'm the only one that remembers that song.
And then Billy Joel came up with "We Didn't Start the Fire" in honor of Mrs. O'Leary's cow.
That's right. Wow.
I've never heard you sing before on this program.
That's good, though. I like that.
But
that's why you let me hang in like that. I've never heard such silence in between segments before.
Peshtigo, Wisconsin has a fairly nice day today. By the way, they have a museum there dedicated to the fire, and every October 8th, the museum closes in honor of those who lost their lives there. But Peshtigo, Wisconsin has cloudy skies and 67 degrees today.
Very nice. And at the site of where the fire is said to have been started today, is the headquarters of the Chicago Fire Department over on DeKoven Avenue, right?
Yes, exactly. I drove by there a week or two ago. DeKoven is really just a small, almost like an alley, you would describe it, between, I think it's Jefferson and Taylor Street. But that's the location. Here are some sobering statistics. 18,000 buildings destroyed here in Chicago, and over $200 million in property damage. That's 1871 dollars. If you made that, had that loss of damage today or loss of buildings, it would be $4 billion, $484 million. $704,918.03.
How about that? That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, we remember. I mean, there's devastating, devastating loss of property and life, more importantly.
300 people died here in Chicago.
Yeah, horrible, horrible. On a completely separate note, suggestions are starting to come in of what we should do with Shawnee at tree time.
Already?
What dangerous thing we should do with Shawnee at tree time. 630 area code suggests Shawnee holds a cigarette in his mouth and Dean breaks it off with a bullwhip. Now we're talking. Be right back with the news next. WGN. So before we get into all things COVID here this morning, just in terms of the marathon, I genuinely do worry about the kind of physical stress that's put on the human body for something like this. I know thousands of people do it all of the time. But, I mean, unless they take the proper precautions, it really can be dangerous for people.
Oh, absolutely. It's really interesting for our timing of our marathon. If you think about these highly trained individuals, they train through the summer when it's the hottest time ever. And then we get to this time and you expect a kind of a reprieve with some of the weather. And obviously, it doesn't look like we're going to get that today. So they'll be running, if I'm not mistaken, it's going to probably be in the low 80s by the time they're about midway through here. So certainly if you have world-class athletes, those guys that finish in the top 50, but you got to remember the tens of thousands behind them are essentially weekend warriors and not professional athletes. And it's a lot of strain. It's a lot of strain on the heart, the lungs, and really it's that whole sense of dehydration. When you're running and on your controlled method, you know when to get water. Certainly they have enough hydration stations out there. So hopefully everybody understands what they're doing and watches their body, and their body will tell them actually when they're getting in some distress.
Yeah, when we used to broadcast out of the window at Tribune Tower, and we'd see the runners after they were finished all wrapped in their aluminum towel, you know, kind of a towel that they gave them, made out of aluminum to retain the body heat. They just looked like they were in such incredible distress. What are the kinds of things that the runners should be doing after the race today and tomorrow to kind of minimize any negative effects there may be?
Yeah, you know, you make a good point. People think that the race is over, you know, this afternoon, but really the effects of that go well into the next couple of days. You know, you have to make sure that you stay hydrated. You think, oh, I'm back to hydrated, I'm okay. Your body also is doing a lot of, I don't want to say damage, but certainly inflammation in your muscles. And we start to look at muscle breakdown, and we start to look at increased protein in the body. So we want to make sure certainly that we stay hydrated these next couple of days, continue to stretch the next couple of days. Although the race may be over, all these runners who have been training for this understand the side effects of going that full 26 miles and what it does those next couple of days. Certainly the retention of the body heat and the temperature regulation, that occurs after just a couple hours after the race. But certainly you want to make sure that you're going to stay hydrated these next couple of days so we don't end up with kidney problems, which would be, I don't want to say devastating, but certainly impactful.
Yeah, very definitely. And as you say, the professional runners, they know how to deal with this. The weekend warriors, as you so perfectly call them, those are the ones that I worry about that, you know, they go out, they want to do a marathon. They've never done it before. You know, hopefully they've trained before they get into it. But, we always forget about everything that needs to be done afterwards. So, you know, we wish them all the best with that. It's been an interesting week of COVID news. I don't want to say good news exactly, but it seems like numbers are continuing to go down. We've seen that before. And I always keep thinking, you know, is this are we genuinely headed in a good direction permanently, or are we, you know, headed for one of those dips like we've had in the past, thinking that everything's fine when really it could shoot back up again?
Yeah, Dean, you hit it right on the head. You know, it's okay, you guys. We are heading in a good direction. Hospitalizations are down. Deaths are still kind of up there, but that's a lagging indicator. In other words, as we see the hospitalizations go down, a couple weeks later, we'll start to see deaths go down. You know, Illinois hit that sobering 25,000 deaths in the state. So just a reminder that this is not completely over. But you make a good point. We are seem to be turning. More vaccinations are going on. The southern part of the state still lagging, but certainly the northern part of the state is doing so much better.
I read reports about things that are going on in Israel where it seems like their fight against COVID is so much more aggressive than ours. The latest is that there are now reports of young kids getting booster shots already, something that's not happening here in many cases. Kids not even getting their first vaccinations yet. People who may have gotten Pfizer are getting Moderna vaccines. There's a lot of flipping and flopping and things that are not happening here. Can you talk about that a little bit? Should we be more aggressive? Should we be more open with the transferal, I guess you might say, of booster shots, one from the other?
Yeah, you make a very good point that we're all looking at right now. Israel is kind of the leader in the world here. Not only are they more aggressive, much more organized as well. So their information basis is excellent. So if you've really followed them, they had high vaccination rates. They've done high booster rates. And like you said, much more aggressive, even in the younger age, of getting boosters there. Is the United States a little bit more conservative with the FDA and CDC? Probably. And I think they're also looking at the worldwide impact. If all of us in the United States started to use boosters, are we really shortchanging other parts of the world? This week and next week will be the most telling as both Moderna and Johnson & Johnson are reviewed.
When do you think we might be hearing information about boosters for Johnson & Johnson and Moderna?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really interesting 2 weeks. And then that's just the medical geek side of me saying that, because you have the FDA advisory committee meeting on Thursday and Friday of this week. And if you remember what happened last time, they made a recommendation for boosters, and then the CDC, or they made a recommendation for no boosters, and then the CDC kind of backed off of that and said yes for boosters, especially for teachers, healthcare workers, jail workers. So it'll be interesting to see now if J&J, Moderna, and Pfizer would now all be approved by the advisory council. Is the CDC going to say, yes, we'll move forward now? Because a lot of the confusion may be, dismantled a little bit, because there's so much confusion out there.
Let me take a break, and then we'll get to your questions and calls for Dr. Kevin Most, 312-981-7200. Before we take the break, though, Doctor, one more note on the marathon. 708 texts in, keep in mind that many of the runners today will be going to Boston for the Boston Marathon tomorrow. What kind of health risks are involved in that, doing two marathons in 2 days?
You know, those are the guys that I read. There was a story in the Tribune this morning about, I believe it was a veteran, a U.S. military veteran, that's going to do that. Boy, those are the ones that you hope are in unbelievably good shape and have, this is their multi marathon. They've run an ultra marathon in the past. The individual who this is their first, second, third marathon, boy, that's not something that I would recommend. And especially Boston, a much hillier course than Chicago, which is, very obviously a very flat course.
And somebody texts in, what about a 65-year-old man who will be doing two marathons back-to-back? Does age make a factor? Or again, does that have to do with what kind of shape you're in, regardless of your age?
No, age definitely has a factor. Think about the pounding that the knees, hips, and low back are making. As we age, those joints deteriorate. Our low back, obviously the cushions between our vertebrae, start to deteriorate. That's why we get shorter as we age later. That's a lot of pounding and a lot of stress on the heart, too. So between the musculoskeletal portion of it as well as his heart portion of it, I wish him well. And I didn't see what the weather's going to be like in Boston, but certainly today, if it gets up into the 80s, it's going to be a stressor on these guys.
Yeah, let's take a break. And when we come back, your questions for Dr. Kevin Most, 312-981-7200 to call in. 312-981-7200 to text. We're back in just a minute. Our segment, which for the year and a half has been all things COVID, today also getting into a few other subjects like the marathon today, and we'll get some questions on that. But Kevin, we start off with a text question that's come in regarding booster shots. It says here that the original vaccine needed 2 weeks after the second shot to be fully effective. Is there a time for the booster shot to become fully effective?
So it's interesting, you know, as we're going into boosters, we're going back into this uncertainty land, right? We don't know enough about when we'll get to the full immunity after that booster or third shot, because that time hasn't hit yet. But certainly the studies have shown that this is going to bring you back up to that 95% protection rate versus the slippage that we've seen with both Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson. But we need to make sure right now as we're looking at the difference between a booster and a third shot. Although the mechanics are the exact same, the third shot, which is right now approved for everyone, immunocompromised, which I classify as over 65. Now, individuals are saying, I went to the pharmacy and asked for my booster, and they told me I didn't qualify yet. And I just remind people, when you go into the pharmacy, ask for your third shot, because that is the population that's being allowed to get the third shot. Yeah, at this point, boosters will follow.
Okay. Here's one from 847. If a pregnant mother is vaccinated, does the baby also have the same protection?
Well, it's really interesting. All the studies have shown right now the importance of this happening, that pregnant women get vaccinated for two things. We know that the disease is much less than the side effects from the vaccine. The more important part is that we've actually seen that breast milk for a mother who is breastfeeding after being vaccinated actually pushes immunity towards that child and protects them during that very vulnerable time where we can't have any vaccination. So certainly maternal mothers who are breastfeeding give a lot of protection to their children with antibodies in the breast milk, and they've actually found that that's true with those individuals who got the COVID vaccine as well.
Here is Roy. You are on WGN with Dr. Kevin Most.
Doc, my daughter, she's 20 years old. She had the Moderna shot, and a few days afterwards, she had these big blotches about 3 or 4 inches on the back of her hands. They look like bruises. So about a week later, we took her to the doctor because we didn't know what it was. And the doctor said it probably was from the Moderna shot. So she only had one shot, and the bruising lasted about 3 weeks. And the doctor said, you know, it's up to you whether to take the second shot. So she decided, she was a little afraid not to do it. So our dilemma is, what do we do now? Do we change shots? Do we try going back to the Moderna? We don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, Roy, so there have been reports in women who have some bleeding and clotting disorders with the Moderna vaccine. Very low numbers, but your daughter certainly could have been one of them. With those side effects and that condition, I would say hold off on Moderna. You still have the option for J&J, which is a totally different vaccine. People have to understand the Johnson & Johnson is the adenovirus-mediated one versus the mRNA of Moderna. So with that known side effect, if she hasn't had side effects with any other flu shots in the past, then I would go with the Johnson & Johnson, which will get her protection. She already has some protection, so if she's super hesitant, you know that she's about 60-70% protected right now with just the single shot of Moderna. But if she's going to get a second, and she was my patient, I would recommend Johnson & Johnson if she really wants to, just because of that potential side effect.
Thank you.
Not the Pfizer?
No, Pfizer and Moderna are almost going to be interchangeable, right? They're like the generics, I'll call them. They are almost the exact same, although the study really showed this in Moderna more than it did in Pfizer. So the mix and match study results aren't out yet, but I would say in better part of safety, go to the adenovirus one versus one where we know she had a side effect.
Okay, Roy, thank you very much for your call. And you've answered this several times, but we're getting so many questions about getting your booster shot with flu shots, with other shots. Many people asking about flu shots and boosters. Some people asking about if it's okay to get a shingle and a booster shot at the same time. What's the story about stacking up on your vaccines at one time?
Yeah, as far as stacking, flu shot and COVID shot, totally fine. 100%. As a matter of fact, as we move forward, I would not be surprised that these two vaccines are going to be placed into one in the future so that we just get one shot in the fall. Not a problem there. The shingles shot, I look at it and say, you know what, postpone that a couple of weeks. A lot of people have a lot of side effects from the shingles shot. Certainly wouldn't want to stack that on time, on top. And really, we're looking for COVID and influenza in a much shorter period of time of protection. In other words, this could happen in a couple of weeks versus shingles, where we're going to get protection for the remainder of our life. So delay the shingles shot, get the COVID and the flu shot now, wait a couple of weeks, and then start your shingles series.
Kevin, have a great Sunday today. Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital. Thank you, Kev.
You got it, Dean. We'll talk soon.
Have you ever done any amount of running at all? Andy, Schwani?
I was on the cross-country team in high school.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Until I blew out my knee.
So what would be the greatest distance that you've run?
Well, I mean, in practice, we used to run 7 to 8, 10 miles just for, you know, getting loose. But the races were 3.1 miles my sophomore year.
Yeah.
And I actually did that one at about 17:27, I think, was my best time.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah. I was okay.
You're a wiry.
I was wiry back then,
fellow. Yeah. I don't hear a peep from Schwani on the running category.
No, I'm here. I was waiting for Andy to finish. I was telling him earlier.
Were you a runner?
I was telling him earlier this morning that we needed a minimum amount of hours of physical education to get credits in college to graduate.
That's right.
You know, you took underwater basket weaving. You took advanced pencil sharpening.
I'm not kidding when I say. Because of that a requirement, I took a bowling class.
Bowling class in college. And I took an archery class. And
archery?
Yes, I did.
Don't say archery this time of year to me.
But I also took a running class. Huh. I really did. And I discovered that I liked it. Of course, this is 45 years ago. But the requirement, if you could run 2 miles in under 14 minutes.
Yeah.
You got an A, and I did it, and I enjoyed it, and I continued to run.
What do they teach you in a running class?
Endurance,
left
primarily.
Foot. No, no, 20. Left foot, then right foot. Yeah. Left foot, then right foot.
In the case of me, yes, right. Start out with baby steps, no pun intended. But
so endurance.
Endurance, breathing.
Minimizing damage.
Posture.
Right.
Yeah. Posture's important. Oh,
okay. And really, really endurance and pacing, since we weren't sprinting with this necessarily. You know, when you got into a flow or got into a rhythm of the running thing, it was very enjoyable. And gosh, I couldn't believe that I did that. It felt like I accomplished something.
I never liked it. I mean, I did it. I did all the same requirements that you were talking about, you know, and they would, you know, make you run a certain amount. I never got to the place where... you know, they say, you know, you get this euphoric feeling.
The runner's high.
This wonderful feeling for the whole thing. I never got that. I just, it always hurt my knees.
Yeah.
Even as a young kid. I mean, I can't even imagine doing it now.
Well, as involved in Boy Scouts is your word. Didn't you have to do some sort of running or physical activity with that?
A lot of hiking.
Hiking, yeah.
I did a lot of hiking. I don't know if
that's different.
I guess we did, you know, some running, but not... I may have, you know, run like 3 miles, maybe 3-5 miles, something like that, sometime back.
I'd be lucky to run 3 yards these days.
In my past, but I can't. It's not pleasant. When I go on the treadmill now to just try to stay in shape, I hate every single step of it. Yeah. Hate it.
Okay.
Can't stand it. So I have nothing but respect for, you know, these runners that train and, you know, can do this, and the sense of accomplishment that people get, you know, that people talk about. I get that same sense of accomplishment, you know, from sitting and watching a couple, 2-3 hours of reruns on TV. That's a sense of accomplishment for me.
That's a different kind of marathon, but it's okay.
Right, right. Good for my cardiovascular system, I think. good for my peace of mind. Here's an update on our text line this morning from the 815 area code. It's Marathon Sunday morning. Happy Dean is freaking me out.
See?
Join the club. Join the club.
What the? Wow. We may have tapped into something new that never has happened here before.
You know, and if we do the show every Marathon Sunday at GNTV, this will become a thing of the past, a tradition, a broadcast tradition in Chicago.
Right, of me being
will be a thing of the past.
Right, it'll be a new tradition, though, Shawnee. Of you know, listen for the one day of year that I'm in a good mood.
That you're ebullient. Yeah,
that I'm ebullient. Ebullient. It'll be known in the future, from generations to come. It'll be known as Ebullience Sunday.
Ebullience Sunday.
Right. We are going to be doing our show from out of the studio. Our annual Tree Time show is back. After we did an in-studio version of it last year,
yes,
which was fun. We had fun, but not the same as being out at Tree Time in Lake Barrington. And we are going to be doing the show with a live audience. You know, with the invited. COVID, everything COVID safe, of course. But it's going to be Sunday, November the 14th. So we invite everybody to come out. We're going to have some musical guests. We're going to have, you know, like the fun that we usually have when we go out there. But what has now become a Tree Time tradition, what dangerous thing can we have Shawnee do to really make it? You know, we want to, you know, you really, you know, put some teeth into this show, if you will, of, you know, to come out, experience the show, and possibly see Shawnee very severely injured as a result of some ridiculous prank that
or
we do.
Or die.
Or die, yeah.
Yeah. Notice how casually he just said that. Or die.
Or die. You know, we did archery where I shot an arrow off of his head 1 year.
Puncturing a cheek.
I'm going to bring in the picture.
Punctured a cheek.
Yes. I'm bringing the right? picture when
yeah.
we go there.
Yeah, it was just a minor puncture. Yeah. It wasn't a big deal.
Well, then a little spackle can't fix.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, we're, you know, we'll have medical professionals on hand in case something.
Are you going to invite Dr. Most?
Well, we'll see. We're working on a bunch of different things right now. Somebody has suggested that Shawnee climb a Christmas tree. That would be good if you climbed a tree.
Yeah.
While Andy and Dean were at the bottom of it with a saw.
One of those tandem saws.
Right.
Yeah. Zoom, zoom,
zoom, zoom, zoom. Right. It's our tribute to lumberjacks.
There you go. I'll wear my flannel.
No, so that's the kind of thing that we're looking at, you know, to happen on the show this year. It's going to be November the 14th out of Tree Time in Lake Barrington. We hope you can come out and experience the fun. It's going to be wonderful to see you all. You know, we'll have masks on, you know, and distancing will be in effect. And hopefully most people out there will be, I don't know if there's going to be a requirement, but hopefully everyone will be vaccinated so we can keep it as safely as possible. But we're still going to maintain all the proper distancing at the same time. When we come back from the break, let's get into our A-list interviews. We've got some good ones this week. One-on-one with James Bond himself, Daniel Craig, and also the villain from the new movie No Time to Die, Rami Malek. Last night, Cindy Crawford was in Chicago. I talked with her before her big fancy schmancy gala event that she was at. We'll share that with you all coming up on 720 WGN. WGN. Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. The greatest theme music that's ever been recorded, the 007 James Bond music. The new James Bond movie, No Time to Die, premiered this past Friday. It will be the number one movie of the weekend. They're estimating by the time today ends, it will top out at $56 million, which is pretty respectable considering that it's a movie pretty much for adults, and movies for adults that have opened exclusively in theaters have not been doing well at the box office. This one obviously has been doing very well. We are lucky enough to score one-on-one interviews with the cast of the movie, including James Bond himself for the final time before he leaves the role, Daniel Craig, who I reminisced with a little bit. It's been a couple of decades since the very first time I talked to him.
Daniel, I was thinking about this, that it's been almost 20 years since the first time that I met you. Mm-hmm. Here in Chicago, you were doing Road to Perdition.
Right. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, yes. A little unknown actor by the name of Paul Newman, I believe.
Yeah.
What memories do you have of being here in Chicago for that?
Oh, I had a way too good of a time in Chicago. it's the first time I was in the city. It was freezing cold when I arrived. I think it was freezing cold when I left. I had a magical time there.
All anyone talks about is how much they love you as James Bond and how much they'll miss you as James Bond. I wonder if you were going to reflect on that. What do you think that you've contributed to the franchise, and what quality should the next James Bond bring to it, do you think?
Listen, I mean, I was given a kind of a blank slate. We had a great script and we had a source material, the source material of Casino Royale, the novel. So we had a great place to start, but I wanted to bring him sort of from the ground up. I just tried to make him my own. That's all I could think of doing. It's the only way I kind of know how to act. And that's what I'd say to whoever the next person is. I'd just say, make it your own. Make it just, you know, take it somewhere amazing. Please.
Have these been the most physically demanding roles that you've done in your career?
Oh, yeah, by a country mile. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing quite like them. But, I mean, I kind of did, you know, I started off that way, so I had to kind of end that way. And one of the reasons I wanted to give up after Spectre is I genuinely thought I couldn't sort of continue doing it in that, you know, the way I started, and I thought, what was the point? So, but I'm very happy I came back.
Yeah, also starring in the movie is Academy Award winner Rami Malek. He played Freddie Mercury in Bohemian Rhapsody, and in this movie is the new villain in the movie. And I thought when I watched the movie, a different kind of Bond villain, very cerebral, almost understated, but still very, very effective. And Rami talked to me about trying to take these roles and make them something special.
Always for me is about doing something unique, something that you haven't seen before. And, you know, it could be polarizing, but for me, I wanted him to have a sense of calm. You know, there's power in being calm. I created a voice and a dialect that I find an amalgamation of something foreign that you can't quite put your finger on. And I think, you know, in the world we live in, we've discovered that foreign things terrify us. A lot of people feel that way, sadly at times. But, you know, just because he's been poisoned and scarred doesn't mean he can't be dignified and elegant. And I like that duality. There's something about his calm and his demeanor that makes him really unsettling. And I really wanted that to resonate in a way that was poignant and understated.
Yeah, it sure did with me. That's for sure. I mean, you know, you had the privilege of being up close and personal with Daniel Craig while he was doing his art. What do you think that he brought to the role of and the franchise of James Bond?
I've been a Bond fan since I was a kid. And, you know, it's no knock on any other Bond, but there's always been a bit of a distance from me watching it in cinema as a hero. I could never quite channel, perhaps. You know, there's something about Daniel's Bond that makes him relatable in this unique way. You know, we all know we can't do what Daniel's Bond does in these movies, but we can feel for him, and we do. He's a very conflicted character with a vulnerability we'd never seen before. And he brought that in Casino Royale. He's brought it in spades throughout. But I knew when I saw that iteration of Daniel's in Casino Royale, we were in for something fresh and reinvigorated. And so for me to be part of his last film, what a treat that I will treasure for all time. The guy is, the guy, Daniel, is such a kind, hearted person with, you know, leadership qualities you would really expect in someone in the armed forces.
I is in theaters right now. Last night, supermodel Cindy Crawford was in Chicago. I got together and we chatted one-on-one. We'll share that coming up after the news. Yeah. 10:37, Dean Richards Sunday morning on WGN, an abbreviated show today to make way for Hapito B at 11 o'clock this morning. In the meantime, we'll continue with a couple of special things for you today. As I mentioned, supermodel Cindy Crawford was in town last night, and we'll share part of that conversation with you coming up in a few minutes. I wanted to spend a couple of minutes talking about a new documentary that is going to be coming out, and as a matter of fact, will be part of the Chicago Film Festival, which kicks off shortly. The film is called Love Charlie: The Rise and Fall of Chef Charlie Trotter, a name that is still very, very familiar to Chicagoans, and really for the the food and culinary community, a name that was very familiar all over the world. Charlie's restaurant, Charlie Trotter's, opened in 1987 and was named the 30th best restaurant in the world by Restaurant Magazine. It was named the 5th best restaurant in the United States and was one of 3 restaurants in Chicago to be awarded 2 stars by the Michelin Guide. By many accounts, to many people in Chicago, it was considered to be the best restaurant in Chicago. Charlie passed away at an incredibly young age of only 54, of a stroke in 2013. But what a character, what a personality he was. In the description of the movie, they call him a gastronomic revolutionary and a culinary bad boy, which by all accounts was exactly describes Charlie Trotter. Joining us to talk about the documentary is Rebecca Halpern, who is the director of the film. Rebecca, good morning, and thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Dean. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, so you probably more than most, were screaming absolutely when I said gastronomic revolutionary and culinary bad boy. I mean, what a character to do a documentary about.
You know, Charlie wrote his own life story, and it could not have been more literary and more epic. It had a very solid beginning, middle, and end, and it was compelling all the way through. And it's funny because, you know, I think he was a very complex person. He thought of himself oftentimes as an enigma. And to many who worked for him and many in the media in Chicago, they thought of him as an enigmatic kind of figure and spent a lot of time either misrepresenting who he was or trying to figure him out.
From a culinary standpoint, in what ways did Charlie Trotter, make his mark, do you think?
Well, I can count, it takes 2 hands to count the list of firsts that Charlie did, but I'll just run down a list. He brought the tasting menu to the United States, the 10-course tasting menu. He did 2 different tasting menus every night, 10 courses each menu, and he changed the menu every single night. So that's 20 new dishes a night, if you can imagine. He brought vegetarianism to the mainstream and made it sort of the centerpiece of his work, which, you know, Alice Waters began that at Chez Panisse, and he took it to the next level. The kitchen table is something that we all take for granted now, you know, the table right in the middle of the kitchen, but Charlie had this idea to bring it to his restaurant, and he did it first. He's credited with inventing microgreens, the little baby lettuces, even smaller than baby lettuces that you see all over the place these days.
Right.
And he did that with Farmer Lee Jones at the Chef's Garden. But beyond that, I think the thing that Charlie is most sort of recognized for is that he's kind of the godfather of food porn in a way. Charlie's cookbooks, in particular his photography, had never been done in that exact style before. You know, in the 80s, you had photos that were taken from a distance with these huge banquet-style tables with elaborate displays, and usually it was like a chef leaning over the table in some kind of pose. But Charlie actually got up close and personal with the food and shot it in a much more intimate way than anyone had ever done before. And I think he did for food photography what Jiro Dreams of Sushi or Chef's Table, the documentary series on Netflix, has done for video content.
Why do you think that Charlie was such a controversial or even polarizing figure to so many people? Was it jealousy? Chefs? I've been in many a kitchen where, you know, chefs are barking orders, and you know it does seem abusive. But that's the way most kitchens are. Honestly, what made Charlie so controversial?
You know, Charlie was an intellectual. He was extremely well read, but at the same time, he was also dyslexic. And so I think for Charlie, he required a certain level of organization and a certain type of operation in order to be able to do his art, to make his food. You know, there was an article in the New York Times last year called The Twilight of the Imperial Chef, and it painted a picture of these chefs as sort of these mercurial, lone visionary geniuses, and that they weren't just running their restaurants, they were their restaurants. And for Charlie Trotter, you know, I think that was the case. And over time, what we've seen is that, you know, that genius, that level of artistry requires, you know, an intense amount of work and discipline, which, you know, could be perceived by today's standards as an abusive work culture.
It's a fascinating story. If you were at all into the food scene, in Chicago, Love Charlie, The Rise and Fall of Chef Charlie Trotter is one that you're going to want to catch during its run at the Chicago Film Festival. There are multiple in-theater screenings. There are virtual screenings that will take place. You can get more info at chicagofilmfestival.com. Rebecca, thank you so much for the film. Thank you so much for joining us today. Some of you will remember the infamous Pepsi commercial starring Cindy Crawford from back in 1992. Everybody was talking about this. Pepsi never seemed so refreshing after seeing her pull into that dusty roadside tavern and enjoying a Pepsi with a couple of little boys just watching her while she was refreshing herself. It's one of the many images that we have of supermodel, fashion icon, businesswoman, Cindy Crawford, DeKalb, Illinois native, who just became famous all over the world for her photographs. That commercial is one of the images that was recreated by the internationally renowned photographer David Yarrow, who has an exhibit that opened last night at the Hilton Asmus Contemporary Gallery in Bridgeport, on Morgan Avenue in Bridgeport last night. It was a charity event for the American Family Children's Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. That's where Cindy's little brother, who at the time I believe was 5 years old, when he lost his fight to leukemia. But Cindy has never forgotten and never stopped supporting this hospital that helped her brother. That infamous recreation of the Pepsi commercial with featuring Cindy and many other photographs of her are part of this exhibition that opened last night and will be open until January 22nd, by the way. Before, they had this big fancy gala dinner and Q&A session last night at the gallery. But before the festivities took place, I got together with Cindy and we talked one-on-one a little about her roots here in Illinois, and a little about the roots of that famous commercial.
Obviously, I did a Pepsi commercial, and I think it was 92, we decided that somehow it even made it over the pond because you knew about it. And David had, this is the third time we'd chat together, but David had the idea of recreating that iconic Pepsi spot, but with a David Yarrow twist. And the only way to really do it was to go to the same location, but then, of course, add elements. So that's actually, that car is a car that David shoots a lot, and I've been in it before. It's not the one from the original Pepsi commercial, okay. And also there were no dogs in Pepsi wolves, commercial. There were two little boys in the original spot. So I like that it's a celebration and a nod to the original, but it's also totally modern.
When you're back here, does it remind you of when you were growing up, when you were coming up, Northwestern?
Oh, absolutely. Things? I was here less than a month ago, and I actually had dinner with five of my friends from high school. And then the next morning, I walked, around the lake. And it brought me back to not only like being a young girl living in DeKalb, Illinois, but coming into Chicago to see the Marshall Field's Christmas displays or go to the museum. But also when I was a college student, which was very brief, at Northwestern. And then my first year and a half of modeling was here with Victor Skrobnesky, and just walking to the studios, his studio on LaSalle. Whenever I'm in Chicago, I try to walk around those same streets. And so much has changed, but so much hasn't as well.
Yeah. There have been so many pictures lately of you and your daughter, your kids who are also in modeling. You obviously feel okay about them, following in the family business, right?
I mean, it worked out okay for me.
Yeah. Did you have any apprehension about that, or, give them advice going into it since you had some experience?
Of course, as any parent would, I think the main advice I gave my kids about any job, including my son's first job at a smoothie factory or smoothie store, was be on time, be prepared, and stay off your phone. So it's the same advice for modeling or working in the smoothie shop. And then, of course, my kids grew up around it, so it was a world that they were familiar with. So I think it was an easier transition than it was for me, being from a small town in Illinois and ending up in New York and, having to get my bearings.
Yeah, this Changing Lanes exhibit of photographs of Cindy Crawford, done by David Yarrow, will be open until January the 22nd. The gallery is at 36th and South Morgan. If you want to get down there and take a look at these amazing photos, I mean, they really are absolutely beautiful. We will have more with Cindy tomorrow morning on the WGN TV Morning News. Couldn't have been nicer. Couldn't have been, more friendly. Just a good old girl from DeKalb, having a chat. It was interesting, though, when she arrived at the gallery. They had things set up for, the interviews like we always do when we do these red carpet interviews. But with Cindy having so much knowledge about these kinds of events and how to look her best and how to be presented best, she and her people walked in, changed the lighting to best present the whole thing. It was very interesting. It was very interesting watching international photographers and an international superstar come in and change the lighting completely. As I say, we'll show you the interview tomorrow morning on the WGN TV Morning News. We'll have a little more of the interview tomorrow morning on my segment with Bob Surratt, like I do every weekday morning between 8 and 8:30, talking about all the celebrity and the showbiz news. Now, talking about A-list interviews, we've got some good ones coming up on TV this week. Going to be also talking with Jamie Lee Curtis, the third now in the Halloween franchise is about to come out. It's called Halloween Kills, just before October 31st. We had a nice conversation with Jamie about the movie and the original film and the franchise and the appeal of, these kinds of movies. So we'll share that with you both on TV and also on Bob's show this week. And we just confirmed yesterday an interview that we are going to be doing with William Shatner, which would always be a treat, always fun to talk with the Shat. But this will be one of his very first interviews that he did when he comes back down from going into space. You've heard the story, I'm sure, that 90-year-old William Shatner is going to be on the next Blue Origin flight that will take place on October the 12th. So the former Captain James Kirk from Star Trek is really going into space this time. We'll talk to him, not immediately when he comes back, but a couple of days later, about what that was like. He's going to be at the Wizard World that's coming into Chicago next weekend. So he was nice enough to give us some time as well. So we'll look forward to bringing all of that to you. And we look forward to bringing you Hamp and OB coming up in just a minute.